Yeah, and I think that's what love is. Like, that is the type of things that are.
Who am I that I would push back?
Every March since 1987, Congress and the United States presidents have designated March as Women's History Month. This year, the Crude Life celebrates and honors their accomplishments once again, along with their contributions in history with interviews, stories that center around women's experiences in oil and gas and industry. The Crude Life supports women in industry since day one and will continue to months after this as well. The Crude Life believes women are vital in energy, today more than ever. From a female's point of view to intuition to specific skill sets, women are vital in energy. Today's women in industry are not only modern-day leaders, but are truly defining history as well. Everyone here at The Crude Life is grateful for all your contributions to industry, to your communities, and to our planet. Here is a fantastic interview with Marlette Dumas of BP.
Well, good day to you, my friends and listeners. Today we have a great opportunity to speak with Marlette Dumas, and she is down in Texas in the greater Houston area, I believe. Am I correct, Marlette?
Yes, Houston, Texas.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you for joining with me today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Bright and sunny down here.
Oh, wonderful. I wish it was like that up in South Dakota where I'm at. But you're down there working in the oil and gas industry, and this seems to be something that you've been doing for quite some time, and I'm feeling very excited. Why don't we start at the beginning, start with you. How did you get into the oil and gas sector?
So at first, just my parents always pushed us for math and science. We grew up in an area that was very mixed racially, so they just thought, you know, what's the best chance for our kids? And so they always just pushed math and science. So I can remember from very, very early on that the education somehow was just incredibly important. And I belong to a group that now is similar to STEM, TSTM, but it's now called STEM. And so just even when I was in high school, that has always been the thing for us. And my mom had introduced me to a physics laboratory run by the government, and I started out as a physicist. And I didn't want to be stuck in a room by myself all day, so eventually I changed my major to mechanical engineering. And I thought that renewables was the way to go at the time, but that was like 25, 30 years ago, and it hadn't quite caught on yet. So I thought, okay, I still want to be in energy. And that's when I began to meet companies like BP and Shell, and I just naturally gravitated toward mechanical engineering on the projects side. So I've been doing it for quite some time, and there were not very many women and definitely not many people of color, but I started there and I just hung in there, and it's probably gotten somewhat better, of course, over the years, but that's how I got started as a project engineer, a facilities engineer, actually, with BP here in Houston, Texas, and I've been doing that ever since.
So was it difficult getting taken seriously in such a male-dominated industry?
Yes. So at first, I think they were doing it because they were really trying hard to diversify their workforce. And some people might have said things like, you know, they hired you because you're an African-American woman or whatever. But my father always told me, hey, it doesn't matter. Back then, anyway, they said it doesn't matter how you get in. Just make sure you do a great job once you get there. And so that's how I started. I started there when I think they hired us at the time, 3 black women, and it was good. Lots of bumps along the way, but also formed some networks with other people on just how to do well and get through each day and meet the challenges each day. So at the time I was doing some deep water projects, bringing them on and with design and just through a stage gate process to bring projects online.
Wow. Has it gotten better then since then?
I like to think so, because now I see more people that look like me. I am a petite woman, so that too played into it quite a bit. Of course, it was very much a male-dominated world, still is, but it's getting better. But I think that back then I was just trying to figure out how to, and now I don't encourage anyone to do this, of course, but back then I was trying to figure out how to fit in. So I would wear pantsuits to work or things like that to try to make myself feel and look more like what they were looking like or
more
behaving
masculine,
like.
More masculine, kind of?
Yes, I took on more of a masculine persona at times. Sometimes I would speak up in meetings. Sometimes I wouldn't, just depending on if they were going to maybe cut me off mid-sentence or something. So I really had to just bring a mentality that, hey, just be present and try to put my ideas forward and put myself forward, even though it was not in the environment that was welcome at the time. It wasn't not very welcome, but still have to somehow figure out how to dig deep and do it anyway.
Right. I can only imagine how difficult that might have been for you. Absolutely. Especially with as much education as you've gotten, it appears that you are very well educated.
Yeah. So my parents' message really, really sank deep with me. I really just grabbed onto that. I have both my bachelor's and master's in mechanical engineering from in Illinois Institute of Technology in Chicago, where my heart is, and University of Colorado in Denver for my master's.
Wow. That is awesome. So what is your favorite part of being involved in the oil and gas industry? What's the favorite part of your education that you get to use every day?
So I wouldn't say that I get to use a lot of the technical things every day. I think that that's part of it if someone chooses to go that route. I went more into the project management and risk management side. But if you ask me what would I say is the best part of that, I think that when we're in engineering school and we're working with students who are also some of the best in the world, or they've been brought up to understand that they need to be the best in the world, it really teaches us how to think. So how to solve problems, how to process, how to make decisions, how to guide people how to be an influencer, how to guide people who are making decisions into making the right decision or the best decision. So the technical things aside, it's more so how to lead and how to influence and how to direct. And that's something that, I mean, probably you can get that in a lot of different ways, but I felt like engineering school really does teach how to solve problems.
Critical thinking and problem solving.
Very
skills.
Much so. Yes, very much so.
I love it. Actually, I can't even, because I would like to think that I'm fairly good at critical thinking and problem solving, but I don't. Ooh, that seems like a very tough job to me. Seems like there might be so much involved. How exactly do you analyze the different aspects?
Gosh, so I think it's a multi-step type approach for me. One is very, very early on, I would say, learn who the players are, who are you solving the problem for, where are the resources, who can I go to for information if it's something that I'm not already really familiar with. So just know who the players are. And then how to gather information, pertinent information, like, is this important, is that important, where to go to get that information, who do I need to talk to. And then sorting through it all. I mean, sometimes you've got some information that may not be important at all. And then some of it is the definite needle in the haystack kind of thing. How do you find that? So that, I would say, is part of it. And then how to present. Once I've made a decision or I think I've found the answer, or I'm looking at this software or whatever, how do I present that to the people that are going to make the decision? So that, too, is important. Like, what will they be most receptive to? And if it's nothing that I don't think they're going to be receptive to, how do I couch it in a way that they will say, uh-huh, yes, I understand how this might be a better direction. So for me, it's more of a process. It's probably 4 or 5 steps, but that's how I do it.
Wow. I was going to say, that's really interesting. That's not even just crunching numbers as much as it's also incorporating in, it sounds like, human behavior and other outside information. I couldn't help but thinking how nice it would be if more journalists would do that amount of research too.
yeah, they probably do, but yeah, that's true.
Oh, some of them absolutely do. I can't.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be them.
Right. No, it'd be a high pressure job, that's for sure. Although, right, has the pressure grown in Texas since mid-January? And then, of course, that cold snap. Have things been changing for you down there?
So yes and no. I think what really caught us was this storm, right? But as far as folks working from home and things like that, yes, that's still ongoing. But like I said, some of them are starting to come back, and some of them were working from home already on some type of limited basis anyway. But yes, I think the pressure is, the industry is going through a change right now, right? So we've got the people think that maybe oil and gas or is not as attractive as it has been in the past. So we're looking at other things now, like renewables and things like that. So that's coming on board. Even though it may seem slow right now, I think that it's going to be very, very important as we move forward. So a lot of the larger, I've only worked for large operators, right? So they're starting to change some of their ways of thinking on what might be a way to go in the future. So maybe not so much petrochemicals, maybe more renewables, or what they could get into, like, for example, electric cars is becoming a thing, right? So what can they do to try to take part in that new direction that our society is, that we're going as a society? So even things like, I don't want to bring up political things, but things such as like global warming and things like that. So we're trying to figure out what we want to look like as a leader still in the industry, even though things are starting to change.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense because, like you said, there are quite a lot of changes, and I'm sure that there's going to be quite a lot more throughout the rest of the year. I mean, we only just made it out of February, right?
Right.
So I guess kind of a big question, excuse me, a big question that a lot of people are wondering is where are things going to be going from here? Do you think that this is going to constitute kind of a cut down on oil and gas itself, or do you think it's going to bring about more of an integration and a balance between renewable energy and the oil and gas industry? I know that Texas kind of prides itself on that balance.
Yes. So I've been in Texas now about 25 years, and I've seen it go from where it was heavily oil and gas, where it really was the number one industry here, and we are world leader, not just leader in the U.S., but world leader as far as almost like a headquarter type situation. Now, Houston itself has taken on many other industries as kind of a headquarters, right? So you've got health and care and things like that down here now. And then oil and gas, the industry itself, the energy industry itself has started to change. So I'm going to say yes. The funny thing, what I think sometimes is just really ironic, I used to pull into the office and I would see some of my colleagues driving electric cars and things like that. And I'm like, how do you work for a large oil and gas company and pull in an electric car? So, I mean, even us, I mean, even in our circles, we can see that things are changing. So would you say it's going to be somewhat of a blended type situation? I say very much so, yes. Even though the profits with the numbers that they're looking for right now may not be there, I think that society is going to push us, or at least make us strongly consider how to make that type of energy more profitable or more attractive. We're going to have enough to last for many, many years, but I think now that they're trying more, okay, what else can we do? What can we do differently and still stay in the good graces of society? So I think that they're almost being forced to be more of a blended type industry. The energy industry, when I say, I'm not talking just oil and gas, I'm talking about energy in general, yes.
Right. Do you see this being kind of a positive? I mean, is it actually helping, I guess, is the real question. Do you think that moving to a more blended industry will actually help the issues that are being brought up by the climate? I mean, or do you think that this is just kind of just where society seems to be shifting to?
I think both. There are a lot of people who are paying attention to what they're doing. Like, you may notice people are recycling more or whatever. So those people are learning what it means to care more for the environment. So they're almost wanting to see that. But at the same time, if as a company, they have their shareholders, their stakeholders, their other affiliations or relationships, and they need to please those people too. So that blend is going to come regardless. And I mean, it may not be 50-50 anytime soon, but it is coming, certainly, yeah.
Well, I guess that actually kind of brings me to another thought. You know, in speaking with, for example, Governor Doug Burgum, he had mentioned a whole bunch about carbon sequestration and using coal. Actually, Governor Mark Gordon had mentioned that too in Wyoming. Do you think that Texas is going to take a focus on coal to begin with? Or do you think that it's going to be more of a focus specifically on like the solar and wind turbine energy for right now? Or I mean, I guess back to that balance, there's options.
So something clean for sure. I mean, something clean for sure, because they want to try to be as respectful to the environment as possible. But yes, I don't really know much about coal, so I can't really speak on that. But I do know that companies, they're responsible for answering to not only our government and things like that, entities like that, but they also have their shareholders, their stakeholders, and people that their bottom line. And so they really do have to follow. They have to follow in that direction, but do it as cleanly and neatly as possible. So I see that you mentioned solar. So I see things like solar and wind creeping up. But at the end of the day, they still have to stay afloat as a business, right?
Right.
So that's kind of where I see it.
Well, and I know that obviously there's multiple options when it comes to energy and where we get our energy from. I keep forgetting that nuclear is even a thing, and I guess
even nuclear,
that was
I was just chatting with a long chat actually with a colleague yesterday about that. And yes, I do see now the U.S. right now. Okay, maybe not as much as a big player, but I do think it's coming.
I have reservations about nuclear energy. It's a lot of power,
mm-hmm,
which could be very, very good, but it could be very, very bad too.
And it could be very bad.
You know,
exactly.
Scary, but really cool.
And
I don't know
if you've explored much into like geothermal. There's this other sources. You're right. It's a big playing field.
So do the businesses that you work with, do they work in the geothermal energy realm?
So no, not right now. The work I do volunteer work right now for the Society of Petroleum Engineers here in Houston. And so they too have even started to change the way that they run their organization. So it's now professionals in energy. So I would say, yes, there is a change across the board. Absolutely.
So, well, yeah, I mean, I guess we've been talking for a little bit about all the changes. We know more changes are going to be coming, and it's so hard to predict with so many variables.
So the thing I also see is a lot of the folks that have been in the industry a while, some people might call them seasoned oil and gas folks, that's all they've known. They've been in it for 20, 30 years. They just happen to were able to stay in the industry. And I think they're going to hope that things stay, that they can stay in oil and gas until their retirement, which should be, you know, relatively soon. But some of the people that are new, like say those that have less than 5, 10, 15 years experience, they've grown up in the industry knowing that there are other options for energy sources. And so I think they're going to be more comfortable, we'll use the word comfortable, with changes of where we source our energy from. So I think for them, it will be okay. It will be fine.
It's just kind of an interesting, I guess, to watch the shift, the mindset shift. But that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. The playing into the mind shift, or even the mindset, right? Some of them are like some of the students that I work with now. They're okay. Their minds are more flexible. They're more, oh yes, I see how that's better for us. I see how it's better for the environment. We can still get close to our numbers, and they're more agreeable to understanding that, yes, this is the direction we're going. But when I talk to some of the folks that have been in the industry like me for, fairly a while anyway, they don't want to see oil and gas go. They think that that's there. It's been, I don't want to say cash cow, but it's been bread and butter for so long that's what they're saying. Well, you know, I'm retiring in 5 years, so hopefully I can ride it out,
Right.
So it's that kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting too, because I've actually been hearing quite a lot more about how our oil and gas industry is actually much more clean and environmentally friendly than the population would like to actually give credit for, or that they know about, I guess, too, you know?
Yes. So lots of things have come into place from the government. Like, can you remember things like, sometimes folks used to talk about flaring, or maybe they still, like for now, they still talk about fracking. So those things are the things that we hear and see on different media, right? What society may not be so aware of is the steps that we're taking to make things better. So you don't see a lot of that anymore where oil and gas companies maybe not respecting the environment as much as they had in the past. So now they're being more A lot of our practices are now more stringent, or we're not allowed to do that, or we're only for certain periods of time or something like that. And those steps, those, even though those steps seem small, those, and some of them are big actually, they don't get, they don't make time. They don't get airtime. So people don't get to see that we're making those changes.
Right. Well, and that's something that I had noticed as well. Is this a factor? Is this something that gets taken into account as you are assessing the different projects, as well as how, you know, what steps have been taken to be more environmentally friendly when it comes to the projects?
Yes, very much so. So I, as a risk manager, which I'm no longer a risk manager, but back when I was, we have different, how do you want to say, different components of the project that we assess. And one of them, and it always is so, is safety and environment. We always seek out what could be the risks and how do we weigh them? Like, how do we mitigate them? How do we assess them? And then what do we do to actually just lower it or completely remove that risk entirely? What can we do differently to remove that risk entirely? So, yes, absolutely. And I'm talking about environmental risk. I'm talking about safety. So when I say environmental things that have to do with the environment or the air we breathe or whatever, and is it a risk, and how do we mitigate it, how do we move it, and what do we do if it does happen, what's our response? So yes, absolutely. So
right. Well, and then I guess I was kind of wondering too, how much accountability is there for the companies when it comes to these projects to be environmentally friendly, or to try and take those steps to be as environmentally friendly as possible? Or
well, there is, yes, I agree with you. There is accountability sometimes even at a government level, like maybe there's a fine that might be assessed. And then even, like I mentioned earlier, for shareholders, stakeholders type people, they need to know that we're behaving in a certain way. And they don't, if we're not, then they'll move on to invest in someone else. So absolutely, there's accountability in that regard. And then even at the project team level, we don't like to do finger pointing, of course, but we work as a team to try to do what's best. And we're held accountable even within our own small groups to try to make the best decision.
Nice. Yeah. See, it just kind of seems like these are the types of, this is the type of information, I guess I should say, that doesn't generally get put out there, because the oil and gas industry is made to look so, so awful. And so I hadn't even brought it up to talk about before, but I guess I had been wondering about the different levels of accountability and consideration when it came to that. So That's good.
A spectrum, I would say. It's a spectrum. So there's always going to be some type of a governmental policy, or we need to follow this rule. And so there's fines, and those, of course, we don't want to have to get stuck with fines. So there's always that, all the way down to the smaller things, you know, like maybe there's a person who doesn't want to sit on a particular team because they've decided to take this direction. So that person may choose to work on a different project team. And like I said, it all boils down to relationships. Do they want to be affiliated with a team and a set of people who have this type of thinking, that we want to do things right and respect the environment, even though we're in oil and gas? So yes. Yeah, I've seen some people make decisions. Like, I have a girlfriend, she decided to go with a company that does that wind turbines. She's been oil and gas ever since day one, just like me, but she's decided to, you know, she still wants to be in energy, but she's decided to take a different route.
Yeah. Seeing it, it's fascinating.
And mostly because of accountability. She doesn't want to be the person who's on the team that's not respecting our environment and things like that.
Well, that's not a bad mindset to keep either, mm-hmm. especially when the consideration that you're taking is specifically for other people. I've heard different things about the wind turbine technology. I don't know. So it's kind of interesting seeing the differences between all of them. I obviously am not a professional within the industry, and so I'm lucky in the way that I get to hear firsthand a lot of information, only because I have this awesome opportunity to speak with really cool people like you.
Thank you.
So thank you. I very, very much appreciate it. Actually, Talk Texas Oil had recommended that we get into touch with you because of all of your extensive background within the industry. So I was very excited about it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I like working with her. She's an awesome person.
Yeah, I guess I'm still kind of new to doing this with the crude life, so I don't know too much about Talk Texas Oil or the petroleum association that you are involved in either.
Oh, yes, Society of Petroleum Engineers, yes. Or well, that's its former name anyway. Yeah, so that group, even though it's called Society of Petroleum Engineers, at least up until just recently, it really is more it's not just petroleum engineers. There's almost everyone from every area of oil and gas. So we have G&G and, we have facilities engineers, pipeline. We have a lot of different folks, but it's a good resource. We have, of course, classes and seminars and all those types of things, so people can study other parts of the industry within our organization. And then we do things like hiring events, which we have one coming up in early April. So it's just an outstanding resource for people, everyone in the oil and gas, and now what we'd like to say the energy industry, because we've opened it up to renewables. So yes, it's a really good resource. And the other organizations that I'm in, they too, even though some of them are for women, like Women's Energy Network and things like that, they too are very inclusive. As far as, I mean, yes, it began with a group of women that were in the oil and gas industry. We were trying to figure out how do we manage our way through being very minority. But that, too, is another excellent resource for women in oil and gas. Definitely.
Sounds like it. What kind of advice do you think you'd have for any ladies who might be listening and are considering getting into the oil and gas industry or into the energy industry in general, I guess?
Okay. So first of all, I say just learn as much as you can while you can. There's a learning curve that is there, and it's steep, right? If you're not a petroleum engineer, they don't teach this in school, right? So it's pretty steep. Align yourself with the right people, a mentor or someone who's been in the industry a while, that maybe this is a person who you know that's in the industry. Definitely align yourself with them and build a great relationship. Learn how to build relationships. That's another key thing. But I would say I wouldn't say it's competitive. It is competitive, but that's probably not the most important thing. I'd say the most important thing is to learn the industry, learn it inside and out, learn their job inside and out, because almost every moment counts. It's almost like a pressure cooker. When I go in the beginning of the day, there's already problems still left over from yesterday. So you're really working hard to cram as much into one day as possible and just learn how to do that. So time management, how to solve problems, and learn what you learn the job really, really well. The industry is so complex. You asked me earlier about why would I have even chosen oil and gas. I chose it because the risk for, I'm upstream, right? I've done a little bit of everything, but I'd say upstream, especially the risk that, and when I say risk, I mean being able to push like technology and things like that, deep water or length of a pipeline or something like that, where it's never been done before. Align themselves with someone like that who knows, who has a history or some experience with how challenging the industry can really be and how to solve those tough problems, and that it's okay to learn how to take calculated risks, things like that. That's what's going to set the difference. Just understand that that is the tone. That's always going to be the tone. Just be willing to work hard to be able to work in that type of an environment where it's just high pressure almost every day.
Nice. Be prepared to work on your motivation and perseverance, in other words.
Yes. Yes. And the other difference I'd say than other parts of the energy industry, some companies work in let's just say hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe a few million dollars. But if they're going to work with like an operator, someone that's a world leader or has largest project, X project in the world, they're going to be working on projects that are billions of dollars, right? So sometimes $6, $7, $8, $10 billion. So understand that sometimes it's not even the size of the project that matters, but just understand that we're talking real money here, more money than some people would ever see in their lifetime. But these projects are, some of them are really, really big dollar, and there's always safety involved, there's timing involved, schedules, cost, all those things. And if they're losing a few thousand dollars in some parts of the industry, that's no big deal. But when you're talking about millions of dollars, that's a big deal. And we're responsible for that, right? The project team members, I might have a piece of the project that they're responsible for that's X millions of dollars. So be able to understand that, hey, the work that you're doing, it's very, very important. And it's affecting people's lives. When we flip that switch, we expect power to come out. When we go to the gas station, we expect fuel to come out. So just understand that we're doing a very important job, and it's our responsibility to learn our job really well and do the best that we can, even though we're in a world that's changing every day. Yeah, just keep learning and stay on top of what they need to know for their role and the project and the company in general.
I love it. That's brilliant advice, probably for any industry, but I love it. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Marlette. I very much appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And I hope at some point I might be able to talk to you again. You never know.
Of course. Absolutely. I'll be right here.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to add? Any
fun? Oh, well, happy, I know I'm a day late, but happy International Women's History Day to the women that are there and all the great work that they're doing. Thank you for the work that you're doing. We're getting there. We are really getting there.
I think so. I think good things are coming. I do. I truly believe that good things are going to be around the corner, and it's going to look up. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And I look forward to in the future when we do get to speak again.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. All right, my friends, that was Marlette Dumas, and she is a brilliant mind in the oil and gas industry, has been for quite some time, and if you enjoyed listening to what she had to say, make sure that you go check out the rest of what thecrudelife.com has to offer.
Cause you remind me that you're running the show. You're running my show, man, is the timing why I'm sleeping alone and losing my focus and what I love and you want something they don't. Even notice, I just want you to know it's more than emotion. And I bet my pride that you are where my heart would rest at home in another life. But in the meantime, I've left behind something that I can't. Fires are turning tidy, your fire is so burning bright.
Gentlemen, let's give it up for Elma Cook.